Ladies and gentlemen, we do thank you very much for your attention, and now we invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy the takeoff. Welcome aboard.
What's up, homesickers? Welcome to episode 10. Today is Sunday, March 2nd, 2019. I'm currently in Phoenix visiting my old Army buddy, Mike. Probably going to be recording a discussion with him day after tomorrow. Let's see. I'm not going to be doing weekly episodes anymore. Not that I was hitting that quota anyway after I told you that. But I'm just going to focus more on enjoying my vacation, enjoying my visits with people, and not having to worry about getting a recording in every week. So I'm going to try and bring you more quality versus quantity. Today's episode is with Zach. Zach is somebody I met on the Couchsurfing app in Santa Cruz. He posted a greeting thing, you know, wanting to meet fellow surfers and stuff on there. So me and a bunch of other people ended up responding to that, and we had a good time in Santa Cruz, and then I kind of followed him down to Santa Barbara. He's got a van doing the same thing. And we recorded the first half of this episode in Santa Barbara, so right around the 1 hour, 22 minute mark. It changes from our more serious discussion that involves gun laws, the U.S. versus Australia, addiction, drug legalization, a bunch of other, hot topics that you guys might be interested in. And then after the hour and 22 minute mark, we are smoking weed and doing laundry. So I think there's a nice balance here. You get, another 40 minutes of fuckery after the serious part. So, listen to the first part, listen to the second part, listen to the whole thing, whatever. What else we got? Oh yeah, I fell off a scooter and broke my wrist, so sprained it, more like. But it's out of commission for a while. So that's why I'm in Phoenix about a week earlier than I had anticipated originally. I was going to try and do some surfing on the Gulf Coast, but looks like I'll just be hopping around, seeing a couple friends on my way back to West Virginia, and then try and get my van sellable. So enjoy the episode, guys. Hope you're having a good day out there. Peace. Cool. We're on another interview in Santa Barbara. This is where I did the one with that one girl I met on couch surfing. We did our interview on like Main Street in Santa Barbara. So
who
it's
was
kind of funny.
Did I meet her?
No. It was this girl, Alexa. She had some weird Xandra. That's what it was. Xandra Doe. Was like her nickname. Everybody's got a nickname nowadays.
Was she a host? Might have seen her.
No, she was just a traveler. And like an artist. She just put out kind of like a hangout thing like you did in Santa Cruz. Just like, hey, looking to grab drinks and go look at art or whatever. So
yeah.
That was like, that was the first person I used couch surfing to meet up with. And
nice.
We had a couple cool days just walking around Santa Barbara.
Cool. Sweet. You posted or published the interview?
Yeah. And she, she promoted it a little bit on her Facebook and Instagram. And
nice.
I tried to, send some people her way for her art and all that. No? You got Facebook, all right.
Facebook's enough for me, I think.
Yeah.
I try and steer clear of having too much social media, because it doesn't seem productive.
Right. Okay. Well, that's why I kind of started using Instagram, was because I got in like some arguments with good friends like back in the day. like, especially about the gun debate thing. That was one thing, like, a few years ago, me and some friends got into it. And then there was the whole Trump thing, you know, that just fucking, some people went to war on Facebook about that stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I kind of quit using it after that, and, like,
Quit using Facebook.
Which I just found out that Facebook owns Instagram. It's the same company. Yeah. But, yeah, I like Instagram more. Just, you know, cool pictures and, like, little motivational tags or whatever. It's
more.
I like it.
But
now with the podcast and everything, I just started using Facebook again. But I just use the, you know, everything I put on Instagram just instantly publishes on Facebook. So and then I check it every couple of days or whatever.
The podcast is more for your own enjoyment of making it, as opposed to, you know, ideally becoming a Joe Rogan one day or something and making a career out of it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm a big fan of Rogan. Like, I love his style, and I mean, I don't think that I'll ever get to, nor do I have the desire to, like, have the influence that he has, but I love his style and just how he's constantly learning from his guests, and it'd be cool if I could get to a point to where I could have enough weight to where I could get cooler people, like experts in certain areas or whatever.
Yeah,
that'd be interesting. Yeah. But I also think it's gonna be cool just talking to, like, travelers and stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
and that's something he knows nothing about, so it is kind of it's already my own style, I guess. But
yeah,
just for myself, I definitely wanted to
just
be more social and work on social skills, whatever.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
I think it's worthwhile. Yeah. One thing I've noticed in my life as I kind of got older, it took a while to realize it, but, you know, everyone is interesting in their own way, or at least you can find a couple of things that you share in common with them or find interesting or can learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when I was younger, I was kind of like, fucking, you know, I don't have anything in common with this person. We're never going to be friends. But now, if I'm, like, stuck at a party or whatever, I can always feel that I can learn something from somebody in some conversation if I need to talk from them.
Right.
And, yeah, I feel that's, like, you'll definitely get that from this process, although it's a more structured, you know, this is obviously more structured than a normal conversation. You'll probably get a bit more knowledge.
Right.
And that's kind of something that everybody who's interviewed by Joe Rogan, I feel, says. They're like, oh, he's just, you know, he's really open to learning and wants to learn from you, and that's what makes it such a great podcast.
Yeah, and it is like an exercise in, like, you know, like, conversation as a skill or whatever, which is cool. Yeah, because once you do a few thousand hours like he has, I bet he could call himself an expert at conversation. Like,
yeah, definitely. So, yeah, it is a skill you can learn as well, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you heard that Jordan Peterson quote about, like, talk to your enemies? You know, because if you're always talking to people that you align with, then you're kind of in an echo chamber or whatever.
Like, yeah. Promotes that.
Talk to your enemies, learn something new.
Yeah. And I think him and Ben Shapiro both, I've heard them both agree that along the same lines of talking to your enemies, it's, if you have, like, a particular line of reasoning on a subject, or if you have a particular view, a well-held view, talking to your enemies generally, or people, maybe not an enemy, but, you know, someone who opposes that view,
right,
it really helps you find any flaws in your logic in arriving to your own view,
mm-hmm.
and also makes you able to argue it a lot clearer, given that you're kind of, you know, you're arguing it to somebody and then they pick holes in it,
mm-hmm.
and it makes you fortify your own argument for further discussions.
Right.
So I think that's worthwhile.
Yeah, that's kind of like the key of the whole, you know, like, people getting banned from social media right now, like, influential people and stuff.
Mm.
That's what Rogan always talks about, is, like, it's a bad idea because you need ideas to compete.
Yeah.
Like, if there's no discussion, then weird things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you freedom of speech, man. Like, you should be able to bring whatever you got to the table. And, you know, if you get shut down, you get shut down. But, like, that's the idea.
Yeah.
It all needs to be out there.
And in some senses, I think it might act kind of like a, you know, how an earthquake would act, where if you've got two plates with pressure pushing up against each other, and if they don't release that pressure for a long, long time, then it's going to, you know, it's going to cause a big earthquake. Whereas if you're allowed little slips over time.
Exactly.
And i.e. there's really right-wing people who are never able to voice their opinions, and they're just internalizing it, and
then they go shoot up a church or something.
Yeah, and then they go shoot up a church. Whereas if they're, you know, if they're allowed to voice those opinions constantly, and people challenge them and say, "Oh, actually, have you thought about this? Or have you thought about that?" Then maybe the church doesn't get shut up. Or who knows? I mean, that's a freedom of speech argument, which I think is a pretty common argument, or comes up in discussions a lot in America.
Mm-hmm.
You guys seems more protective of your freedom of speech than Australia.
I was just about to ask that. Yeah, what's Australia's policy on that kind of stuff?
It's still generally the same, in that everybody obviously believes you should have freedom of speech, and it's good for society to have an open dialogue about things, insofar as, you know, people aren't spreading hate speech or just gay bashing or marginalizing anybody. But yeah, I consume a fair bit of American media, as I think most of the world does.
Right.
And it just seems to be a more common argument, this argument about, you know, the importance of free speech and its importance in society here in America than in Australia. Like, you'd rarely hear the mainstream media talk about freedom of speech. But here it's, I understand it to be a common argument.
Right.
So, one thing I've noticed, or one thing I was always interested in coming over to America, is what people's views are on gun control, and I guess, you know, where they're coming from and how they justify those views.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your view, for instance?
I'm an advocate, I guess, for gun rights. Okay, so here's what my thought process lately has been, that it should be at least as hard to own a gun and use a gun as it is to drive a car. That seems like a pretty basic step that would put things more in the right direction, because it's too easy. If you're over 18 in America, you can go buy a rifle. If you're over 21, you can go buy a handgun. And that's same day, yep, any state, I'm pretty sure, in the U.S. I'm sure there's some with, like, Chicago or something probably has some places do waiting periods, so you'll go apply and then pick it up 7 days later or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a good idea to avoid maybe, like, a crime of passion or whatever.
But
I think in general, if somebody really wants to, like, do damage, they'll wait the 7 days and then go do it anyway. Mm. But, I feel like it's a similar argument for cars and guns. It's like, they have their purpose, they have their place, they're useful tools, but also, if you don't know what you're doing, you can cause a lot of damage really quick.
Yeah.
And,
I think you have to be clear there in saying that I agree guns generally do have their purpose, but only a very narrow type of gun, only a very specific type of gun has their purpose. For instance, obviously in a military sense, an assault rifle has its purpose.
Mm.
And in a, well, I guess only in a military sense as well, as far as I can tell, a handgun has its purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But in day-to-day life, for your average citizen, Like a rifle has its purpose for farmers and those sorts of people.
Right.
But there's really, from what I can tell, there's no reason why an automatic weapon, or even like an automatic weapon or a handgun, automatic rifle or handgun,
mm-hmm.
would have a purpose.
Well, they do. One thing that doesn't get talked about very much is that, like, the AR-15, you know, the big one that always comes up in the debates, is, like, it's an awesome varmint rifle, is what they classify it as. Because it's varmint, like groundhogs, or, you know, farmers are always dealing with groundhogs, coyotes, stuff like that. So what it is, it's a high-powered 22 caliber, which is very small, very fast bullet.
Yeah.
And it's perfect for smaller game like that. And then the semi-automatic feature, being able to fire off quickly, is good if you need to take a follow-up shot, or you've got like 50 prairie dogs out there, you can get a few of them. But
do you realistically...
Is it necessary? Do you
realistically need to... I mean, how many people are killing a bunch of prairie dogs and a bunch of, you know, groundhogs or whatever? And is having their right to that gun to use it whenever they need to do those sorts of things, does the right to that outweigh the potential downsides of saying, yes, this gun's useful to society?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's tough. Especially me coming from the military. Like the AR-15 is one of my favorite platforms. That's
But that's in the military, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, people make a case for it, for like a home defense weapon or whatever. I never back up that argument, but...
Yeah. So anyway, it sounds like you're generally in support of gun control. Whereas you define gun control as at least as hard as, you know, driving license.
Exactly. You should have to pass a test. You should have to go somewhere and show a professional that you know. Because one of the things that really bugs me is, like, when I go to the range with people and they won't even, like, pay attention to, like, muzzle awareness, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, in the military, they stress that, they hammer that into you. Like, your gun is always loaded. Even if it's been empty, it's never seen a bullet in its life. Like, your gun is always loaded. It's either pointed at the ground or it's pointed in the air. Yeah. If you ever pass your rifle in front of a buddy, like, ooh, you're gonna get some punishment for that.
Yeah.
And people do that at the range all day, you know, people are careless.
So at the range, I think it's... you can actually turn you could shoot the person next to you if you wanted to.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I don't like going to public ranges a lot of times, because there's always somebody there who doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, their buddy's trying to teach them or whatever, and I don't know, it's just not where I like to be. I like going and shooting in the woods somewhere with a couple close friends. If somebody's learning, you know, that we can keep an eye on that person and stress the important things like that.
So anyway, you're generally in support of gun control, but I feel like most Americans wouldn't share the views that you have and would be more in support of just, I guess, this current system that you've got, where it's just, you know, you have a right to bear arms and that's your right and no one should try and take that right away from you.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think, like most things, we gotta meet somewhere in the middle, right? It's like immigration. Mm. Open borders, not a good idea. Closed borders, not a good idea. There has to be a process. We gotta meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Think deeper about the whole thing, and I think that's what needs to happen with guns. We could definitely tighten up a few different things.
Yeah.
And but, you know, then people argue the whole slippery slope thing, and that, you know, if we give up our semi-automatics, then, you know, they'll just come for the rest a couple years down the road. And and then there's the argument for, you know, if the government tries to crack, whether it's guns or something else, like, semi-automatic rifles are kind of the standard of what you would need to fight back. Like if so, if we were invaded or if the government tried some kind of crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that government should fear its people. I think that's like a solid point. You should never feel afraid of your government. Government should be afraid of the people because they are the people.
Yeah, since coming to America and trying to understand people's views on gun control, one thing that keeps coming up, which was super foreign to me, is that generally Americans don't seem to trust their government, or at least they feel that there could be a situation where, you know, the government tries to enact tyranny on them. And I don't really, I've never really asked specifically what they're, what Americans are afraid of, but they just kind of feel that, you know, the government will come in and, you know, try and do something to them, you know?
I'm not sure exactly what their
guns.
Yeah.
Have you heard that before? That kind of feeling that people have?
Yeah. I mean, it comes up every time in the gun debate for sure, but I'm honestly not exactly sure what people are afraid of either.
Because that's completely foreign to me, right? Like, I've never personally thought that the government would do anything overtly sinister to me. Or like, you know, obviously there's low-level corruption in Australian government, but I could never see them coming in and forcing me to do anything. Certainly not a situation where I'd need a gun to stop them to do so.
Yeah, hopefully not, right? No. And it's like, yeah, when you're talking about the government, you know, it would be the military, right? So it would be the American military coming around to American homes. And like, you know, as a veteran, I can tell you that most people in the military would not be on board with that.
Yeah,
exactly. they're not going to...
I mean, the military's just normal people, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. Bunch of dudes from Texas.
Bunch of
good old boys. Yeah. If you tell them, yeah, it just wouldn't work. I don't see it panning out. But
yeah, it's something that came up in every conversation about gun control, and I found it interesting. It seems to be, you know, the genesis for why people feel they need guns to protect them from the government in some form.
Yeah.
Which now I don't think people around the world have that fear of their government. Maybe obviously in, you know, North Korea and maybe China and stuff like that, but yeah, not in many first world countries, I don't think.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this might sound crazy, but I think a more realistic argument would be that it would be nice for everybody to be armed, or the people that are already armed, whatever, in case the U.S. was ever invaded. Like, that would be a good time for every house to have a semi-automatic rifle. Because, if it comes to that, I'm going to be that insurgent, just like over in Iraq, you know, I'm going to be up on the rooftop taking shots at the convoys as they're coming down my street, and I'll be planting bombs in the side of the road, and I'll be taking a page out of their book.
Yeah. But would that realistically ever happen?
I feel like we're due for one. I feel like the U.S. is always poking people and sticking our nose in places we don't need to be. And I feel like we're due for an ass kicking, you know?
Not on American soil, though.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how...
I don't see that ever happening. I mean, you guys have got the best military in the world. And sure, not everybody internationally likes America, but, like... Yeah, to suggest that someone's gonna come onto American soil, it's more likely
they just nuke us or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And even if they were to come onto American soil, I feel like it would be better for the government to hold all the weapons, you know, rather than stockpile them for when such an occasion should occur. And then at that point you say, okay, look, you know,
pass
Max, this is happening. Come and collect your AR-15. And
yeah,
I want
then,
you to go
then
here.
People don't have the practice with it, you know.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah. Do you ever go shooting? Have you?
Not really. I mean, I've shot guns I've lived in the north center north of Australia, a town called Darwin. I don't know if you've ever seen that on the map, but it's outback, right? Super outback. And people from work had farms and they had guns, and I went out shooting with them and went hunting. But we never had like an automatic weapon or anything like that. It was like 303s and
bolt action rifles.
Yeah, just rifles and stuff like that.
Nice.
And yeah, I mean, you know, shooting's obviously fun, right? For I think most guys with testosterone in them would agree that it's really fun. And yeah, I enjoyed it, but to me that's a step. Yeah, my enjoyment doesn't mean that I think people should have easy access to guns.
Right. What is Australia's policy? Is it the way I understand it? It's like you have to have a need for it and apply for it, get a special permit.
It's pretty well controlled.
Yeah.
Much harder to get a gun than a driving license, for sure.
Mm.
And most people in Australia, I think, would, if you live in a city, you'd probably go your whole life without ever seeing a gun. Apart from on the police, of course. Mm-hmm. The police would have a handgun with them. But yeah, you'd have to have an interest in seeing a gun to go out and find one. I think the interesting thing in gun policy between the interesting difference in gun policy between Australia and America is that, well, just to go back a couple steps, it's always kind of portrayed as a joke in Australia that we were able to get rid of a bunch of guns and have never had a mass shooting since we were able to do that.
Right.
Whereas America's never tried to do so. And often there'll be jokes on skit shows where Australian foreign correspondent will go over to the streets of New York and be like, oh, you know, what do you think would happen if America got rid of all its guns? What would happen to the homicide rates and mass shooting rates? And it's always a loaded question in that Australia's actually in the, I think, the 70s or so. Don't quote me on that. But in the somewhat recent history, Australia had a very big mass shooting.
Right.
Not very big, but maybe 20, 30 people, a mass shooting. And the government in charge at that time said, oh, look, you know, this is just, we can't have these mass shootings in a modern country. We have to introduce stricter gun control.
Mm-hmm.
And they put in place a gun buyback policy where they just said, you know, no citizen, unless you have very special need, should have a gun. And we're going to buy every single gun in the country, which is obviously easier to do in a country where you have a population of 20 million as opposed to 300 plus, right, like in America. But yeah, they said, yeah, no one can have a gun. We're going to buy them all, and we're going to, I think they melted them or burnt them or something, destroyed them, right? And they did it, and it worked. They got them all, and and yeah, we haven't had a mass shooting since, right? And it's pretty, you know, it's pretty big proof that potentially something similar policy could work in America.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about the potential benefits of it, like, you know, the mass shootings you guys have here are just like, it's really sad, right?
Agreed.
Like,
yeah.
Terrible. And it doesn't look like there's any signs of it slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's even speeding up. So I think it should be seriously considered by America that, you know, Australia's been able to eradicate that problem. But in that same, I guess the argument that Americans would have, which is a fair argument, is that just because you could do it in a country like Australia, where you have a certain culture towards guns, doesn't necessarily mean that it would 100% translate to America, where you have a very different culture towards guns, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you guys have, What's the amendment? The fourth? Fourth?
Where Second
you have
Amendment?
A right, Second Amendment.
Yeah.
Where you have a right to bear arms.
Yeah.
I mean, that's heavily ingrained in American culture. So if the government were to go out tomorrow, American government were to go out tomorrow and say, we're going to buy back all of your guns, it wouldn't happen, right? There'd be people who would say, you know, come try take it. And they'd defend it. But that's not to say that it could never work, I think. And that's the important difference and something that I've brought up in conversations with people American people, where they feel like, you know, what Australia's done could never work in America because we want our guns here and no one will ever take it away from us. And even if the government were to come in and try and take it, they'd defend it.
Right.
Their guns with their guns. But I feel that what's important is realizing that that's a cultural attitude, right? People feel like they need their guns and should have them, and that's a cultural thing in America.
Mm.
And culture does change and can change.
It's always changing.
Yeah,
right?
It's always it will change. So unless people, it would have to be young people presumably, start advocating to change gun control in America, the culture's never going to change to a point where it's current day, I need my guns, you're never going to take them away from me, to plus 50 years, you know, maybe this policy that worked in Australia could work for us, you know? There's going to be no genesis for that change.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what it highlights, really, is that, like, we're just not good at compromising over here. We have, you know, the left and the right, and it seems like, especially with the last election, they just keep getting more extreme on each end, and people are less and less willing to just like meet in the middle somewhere.
Yeah,
that's what it seems like would really help with the gun thing and a lot of other things, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think private lobbying to political parties is a bigger problem in America than other parts of the world.
Yep.
From what I can tell, much more of a problem here than in Australia.
Yep.
You guys have the NRA spending X amount of millions of dollars. I don't know how many, but I understand it's a lot.
Big influence, for sure.
To the government, and they're never going to... Nothing's ever going to change if you have somebody's, you know, a gun organization saying to the government, you know, make our rights to own and keep guns easier, and we'll keep giving you money so you keep getting elected, right?
Yeah.
And there's no actual productive reason why the NRA should be giving the government money to run their political parties.
Yeah, I don't get why money has anything to do with politics.
No.
What?
Shouldn't make a difference.
No, it shouldn't.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, anyway, they're my thoughts on gun control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely like to see less of, and I mean, it's the mass shootings, and then it's also like, you know, Chicago is one of the, like, the, I'm pretty sure, the murder capital of the United States.
Do you agree with this idea that guns don't kill people, people kill people?
I do, and I think, yeah, and I think when people talk about that it's a mental health problem, not a gun problem, there's definitely some validity to that, because evil people are gonna, you know, just like the guy who drove his, you know, car through a crowd of people at some demonstration in Charlottesville, I think.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's tons of ways you can hurt people. Tons of ways.
But and I think a gun's most effective.
It
if
is.
If you want to do that.
For sure. But I think that sick people are going to find a way regardless. And I think we need to find out why people are getting to that point.
Mm.
Which kind of goes into one of the other things I had written down for us to talk about, like the whole drug legalization thing. I feel like we're looking at it in the wrong way, trying to treat the wrong thing, like you know, making like the war on drugs doesn't cure addiction at all. I was just listening to this cool podcast with Johan Hari. It was like the most recent one on Rogan, I think, and I'm like halfway through it, but he's kind of like, he's a journalist and an expert on the whole subject and studies drug culture in different parts of the world and stuff, and how different countries like Portugal and Switzerland, I think, were two that went complete legalization, and you know, like safe injection sites for heroin users, and like I can't remember all the figures he was talking about, but like that fixes the problem. Like it's shown it's that safe injection sites, because whenever you criminalize that type of stuff, like of course the guy out on the street banging heroin because he hates his life, like you call him a criminal and a degenerate. Well, he's just gonna stay numb after that. Like there's no incentive to get better. But when you give somebody a safe injection site, they have and they were even talking about, like, you know, how it's free. They give the dope for free, and then people eventually like kind of get their life together. I wish I could.
I've read about what's happened in Portugal, and I think it is Switzerland. And it does seem to help the, you know, solve the problem. But yeah, I understand the main point is that legalization is important. It's important in the whole process, but it's also providing those support services, right? Because no one really wants to be a heroin junkie. It's not fun. Maybe it's romanticized in certain movies like Trainspotting and in the media at some point, but it wouldn't be fun, I don't think. And these people, if given the choice, they'd want to get out of it, and given the help that they need to get out of it, they will. And yeah, I don't know. Do you know if America is providing that sort of thing at the moment?
We're doing safe injection sites in certain places. I think Seattle, maybe. It's one of the ones I heard about.
Okay.
And Colorado, maybe, even.
Yeah.
I thought I heard something about it out there.
Because it does seem to be one... Drug policy does seem to be one area in which America is maybe a bit more progressive than Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Given that you've legalized marijuana here.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting there. We're about halfway there, I think.
Well, maybe, what do you got, like 4 states out of 50?
Yeah, and I actually think the majority, I think it's like in the 20s, have medical legalized. So the recreational's coming up behind it, but I mean, it'll get there. And, you know, people are saying like the 2020 elections, if we get a Democrat, that it'll most likely be national legalization. And I've heard about stuff about, you know, pardoning the people that are already in jail for nonviolent drug offenses, which is like, how can you leave somebody in a cage after you make what they did legal? And it also kind of goes hand in hand with the gun thing, right? Like Chicago, people wouldn't be getting shot every day if cocaine and heroin were legal. Like, it's mostly in control of those markets is why a lot of the violence comes from, so...
Yeah, that's a good point. Just
take away the guns and make heroin legal.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, heroin is a sticky one because you can't see benefit in having in the same way that you have marijuana dispensaries here.
Right.
You can't see any benefit in having a heroin dispensary, right? Because people can and will OD.
Yeah.
If you can, on heroin, if you can just go to the shop.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure where you draw the line in terms of drugs that you could make legal. Cocaine, I don't know. Could you make that legal?
I'd be all about cocaine if it was about half as expensive. I think it's a great little tool for when you go out to the bar and you had a little too much drink and you need to.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
But maybe too addictive, you know.
Maybe. I've never had that effect on me.
I mean, heroin is obviously addictive. Marijuana, I don't think is addictive. You could get like an emotional dependency or addiction to it.
Yeah.
In the same way you could to chocolate or whatever, but I don't think it's addictive.
Yeah. Well, that Johan Hari, I need to finish that episode because he talks about how a lot of these things that we think are physical hooks aren't really. And it's just people that get into a pattern and this is how they deal with whatever problems they're going through. It just becomes a spiral that becomes hard to get out of. And for sure, like strong opiates and whatever do have a physical addiction effect. But one of the comparisons he was talking about, let me see if I can put this together, was nicotine. And they're saying that once they came up with the nicotine patch, they were expecting everybody to just quit cigarettes, right? Because why would you smoke cigarettes?
Yeah.
But the invention of the nicotine patch and gum and stuff took away like 10% of the cigarette users.
Yeah.
And I forget what that was supposed to highlight, but
that maybe there's something else, another part of addiction that isn't satisfied by a nicotine patch.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Thanks.
Because I think you need some. My understanding of habits and addiction is, you need some reward at the end of it. You know. Whereas, smoking a cigarette, maybe you get the reward of not only the nicotine hit, but you're going outside and talking to friends, or you're relaxed by it, or taking a break from work or whatever it may be. It's probably different for a bunch of people. Whereas the nicotine patch may just give you the nicotine, but it doesn't give you the reward, and to have that closed loop of a habit, you need the reward.
Right.
I believe.
And I smoked cigarettes for 10 years, close to it.
Do you still want to?
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes.
Yeah.
But marijuana helps me out with that. Gives me the.
But you don't put any tobacco or.
I like blunts. I like getting Swisher Sweets, which have that.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bit in the wrapper. And sometimes I'll leave a little bit of the innards in there just for a little.
But you don't smoke spliffs?
No, no. No, that would be like half tobacco.
Yeah,
half,
you don't do that.
Yeah, no.
One thing I've noticed about addiction is that it seems that a healthy, balanced person will find it hard to get addicted to anything too heavy. You know, like a healthy, balanced person sure can get addicted to cigarettes, but that's, you know, socially acceptable more or less to smoke cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to something heavier, like to go back to cocaine or heroin or meth or something, I've known one proper junkie in my life, which was my stepbrother, who's since passed away when he was like 35. And ever since being a kid, he didn't seem to have an off switch, you know? Like when even something as simple as my stepmom cooking a good roast, normal people could have dinner, enjoy it, and get to a level like, that was really good, I enjoyed that, and now that's enough, you know? And he could never stop. He always had to go more and more and more, always going back for more and more, right? And I think that the same normal people have that same attitude when it comes to smoking weed or drinking, right? Where you kind of, once you become a bit older and, you know, you're mature, you can get to a point where you're drinking and you're like, this is the level of intoxication I want to be at. And, you know, if I have one more, maybe I'm going to be too drunk, or you know, I'm just going to try and maintain here. I'm going to wait another half an hour before I have another drink, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And most people can balance themselves that way.
Right.
But he could never do that. And I always noticed that about him. And it seemed like he's, you know, lacked something internally. Maybe not lacked it, but, you know, because that makes it sound too derogatory. But he didn't have it, basically.
Right. Do you think that's something that can be taught? Or do you think that some people are just inevitably going to be...
I don't know. I kind of feel like most things in... which make up our personality are probably genetic. There's a balance of nature and nurture, but... this seemed, yeah, something innately within him, not something which could be taught. Because, I mean, you know, I saw his life, and it's not, you don't want to be a junkie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't look fun, and he didn't enjoy it, but he couldn't break out of that. And it subsequently ended up killing him. So, yeah, I think it was something within him, probably genetic as well. And I suspect that as we learn more about genetics, maybe we'll be able to point a finger to certain genes that make you more likely to be an addict. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to hear about that.
That's all right.
It would be cool if they could identify something like that. Because like we were talking about before we started recording, I feel like, you know, I joined the military right after high school, and you know, I did the usual smoke weed, tried some different pills, whatever, in high school, stuff like that, cocaine a little bit. And then as soon as I went into the military, you know, they drug test you. So alcohol becomes the drug of choice, or cocaine on the weekends for some people, because it's something you can do on Friday and piss clean on Monday. But alcohol's a weird one, isn't it? Because, you know, it's like the most accepted, and yet you can drink yourself to death very easily.
Yeah.
Or, you know, get in a car accident or something. And, I feel like a lot of people who could have had a better alternative in the military just became alcoholics like I did. And then after I got out, you know, I went back to smoking weed again. And so there's always been something in my life that I kind of need as a vice or whatever. So it'd be interesting to see what my genes look like in relation to those type of things. But
I think it would be, you know, genetic selection is obviously a slippery slope, though, right? Because then I think everyone would agree it would be a good idea for in the future when you could select for genes that a parent could say, oh, I don't want my kid to be an addict or have Down syndrome or have multiple sclerosis or whatever. That would be beneficial for society, but when it comes to, you know, selecting for intelligence, again, maybe that would be good to have a completely intelligent race. But things like sexuality, for instance, I don't think anyone can 100% say what causes someone to be straight or gay.
Right.
But again, I think it's a mix of nature and nurture, but they're probably, I suspect, will one day we'll find a gene for it. And, you know, is it good for society to have people to be able to select for homosexuality or straightness?
Yeah, it's a weird one. Not. Yeah, I don't like the idea of gene manipulation at all, just because I think, you know, we're really smart. We can do a lot of cool stuff, right? But, like, we don't know what the repercussions of those things are. And we're already, like, in the weeds with a lot of stuff like that, where our smarts have gotten us in trouble. We're killing the planet. And yeah, that's something I don't want to see get super prevalent. But, yeah, it's hard to argue against turning the one off to make sure your kid doesn't have Down syndrome or something. It's like, it's a pretty hard argument.
And I think they can already do that specifically with Down syndrome.
Really?
They measure the neck. You can measure like the width of the neck or something like that.
Really?
And that, yeah, I think a wide neck shows that it will have Down syndrome, like the proportion of the neck in proportion to something else. But Yeah. Interesting times ahead. But I think one other point of difference I've noticed about America and Australia, and probably even when I say Australia, I'd say in international countries. I've been through a couple and spoken to young people in lots of countries, and everyone seems to, young people at least, always seem to be optimistic about the way that their country's going, and the way that internationally the world is going, be that in terms of climate change. Yeah, they accept that with regard to climate change there's going to be some tough times ahead, but we will figure it out, and they're generally optimistic about the direction we're going, and you know, general public policies and gun control and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that in America, people, young people, are a bit more pessimistic about the way things are going. You know, mm-hmm. Have you found that? Like, they, when it comes to gun control, for instance, they feel that nothing's ever going to change, and
right.
You know, we're never going to be able to eradicate the mass shootings because there will always be guns in America, and unfortunately people will use them for the wrong thing. And when it comes to climate change, people, young people in America, seem pessimistic about, you know, what the final outcome is going to be. And it's pretty sad, I think, to see that level of pessimism in young people in America.
Yeah.
They don't feel like they can make a change, or the world's heading in the right direction.
Right. I feel pessimistic in the sense that, like, what we never talk about is population control, and that kind of contributes to all of these problems, and that we seem to be on an inevitable growth spurt, and like, I don't know, that's kind of what bums me out. It's like, yeah. We're going to have to figure out how to colonize Mars pretty soon, or yeah. We are going to be fucked, I think. Yeah.
What would you do, though, if you could wave a magic wand and introduce some policies? Or,
I mean, I just finished this book, Ishmael, which was recommended to me by another traveler, the first girl I did an interview with, Michelle.
Yeah.
And it's basically, it's a gorilla explaining to a man in America how we've strayed from like the natural way of being, and how nature sorts itself out like that, like the relation of food supply to population,
mm-hmm.
and how we've taken agriculture to such an extent that like every year we're making an abundance of food because we know that there's going to be 2 million more people next year,
mm-hmm.
and that where was I trying to go with that? I don't know, kind of lost my train of thought.
Yeah,
but
you mean just that we've lost that?
That's what I was getting at.
We're not in touch with nature.
I think the fix is to try and look at things more from an animal perspective, because we are animals. That's what a lot of our problems come from, is seeing ourselves as this above the laws of nature thing. We have, you know, we can manipulate and control nature, and it's not really true. Like, we're always going to be.
But how would you specifically make a change, though, to get more in touch with nature?
Well, that's the thing, is nature's pretty brutal, so the changes aren't things that people would want to hear, but, you know, in nature...
Do you think like a one-child policy is a good idea, or...
Might be a step in the right direction. Yeah, I mean, in nature, the population can only grow as much as the food supply, and then the excess die off, and that's what kind of keeps nature in check.
But isn't also, that still, aren't we still in a natural balance then? Because, yeah, we're using like factory farming and GMO crops, but it's all broadly natural in that humans thought of it and can do it, right? It's not back to land natural, like really grassroots agriculture, but it's, you know, still generally natural, I think.
Yeah.
Like GMO, for instance, we've thought of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Humans have thought of it, and it works, and you get higher yield crops as a result. And
but they're not the healthiest, and there's a huge toll on the environment because of it, and nobody's talking about less population, so it just keeps growing and growing every year. That's where my pessimism comes, is that, yeah, I don't see a good way to present that argument to the population. It was like, hey, there's too many of us. Mm. We got to slow this thing down. Or like...
I've noticed, though, broadly, as there's a strong correlation between education levels and the amount of kids that you want or have, you know. Mm-hmm. And as a population becomes more educated, they seem to want kids less, or large families less.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that? I think I've read that in some, you know, some social, I don't know, I've read it somewhere, but
yeah, it seems to make sense. I can't think of any specific, but
that's a reason to be optimistic, you know, as we grow more educated. We'll have less kids, in that we know that our kids are going to have a far carbon footprint of whatever it may be, you know.
Right.
And that's a discussion that happens a lot amongst people in young people in Australia that I know, who are kind of greenies, or left, far to the left of the side of politics. They feel that it's somewhat unethical to have a kid in modern times,
mm-hmm.
for the kind of reasons that you say, you know. It's just another person in the world, and realistically the chances of your kid bettering the world are pretty small, right? Like, the chances are they're just going to consume and fly planes around everywhere and buy cars and
mm-hmm.
eat food, and they're not going to come up with some massive innovation which solves climate change or carbon emissions, you know. So that's something I think people are talking about, and could be a reason to be optimistic about the direction.
Yeah.
But it's probably not a topic of conversation for people in third world countries, where they're just, you know, having kids to run the farm or whatever, to look after them when they get older.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense for sure. Another thing we might run into with the population control is that, you know, the natural way, whenever things get a little too crowded, is that's where the breeding ground for disease and viruses comes from, and kind of sorts itself out, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Let nature run its course.
Yeah. I don't know.
Another interesting thing I've noticed about American culture is that I first noticed it when I saw a pharmacy here, right? Like, pharmacies are massive here. Mm-hmm. Bigger than any I've ever seen anywhere in the world. Like, you guys have drive-through pharmacies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that points towards a different cultural understanding of the importance of pharmacies, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Australia, for instance, we only have drive-through bottle shops, and that's probably an interesting point, where we find a bottle shop's the shop where you can buy alcohol.
Right.
So we've made that a drive-through shop because we think that's important to have lots of alcohol and have super convenience in obtaining it. But you guys have drive-through pharmacies, and like, realistically, you shouldn't need pharmacies the size of like the CVS pharmacies I see here. Mm-hmm. They're massive. They're like as big as the supermarket.
Yeah.
And I feel like in other parts of the world, they're really tiny, you know? And it probably points towards Americans feeling that they need to medicate themselves with a bunch of artificial pills.
Yeah, we can fix everything with a pill, can't we? It's like you get a little virus, take an antibiotic. But like, you know, even in that little thing, I look at it as you need to strengthen your immune system by exposing yourself and letting your body fight that kind of stuff and only go into medications if it's like absolutely necessary. There's definitely an idea that like we can just fix everything with pills over here. And one thing I didn't realize until a couple years ago or something, I think it was probably on Rogan, somebody mentioned it, that like other countries don't let pharmaceutical companies advertise the way we do.
Yeah.
You open, I mean, nobody watches TV anymore, but like, you know, it used to be every other commercial on television was a pharmaceutical ad. You still see it in magazines.
I was watching at a girl's place at TV on Hulu the other day. She had just the free one, which presumably a lot of Americans do.
Mm-hmm.
And there was ads for different medications.
Yeah, I guess I've seen them on YouTube and stuff now.
So I think it's that's.
But yeah, magazines, billboards on the side of the highway. Like, are you depressed? Try Paxil, which you know.
Yeah, because I saw these ads, found it interesting, and I was like, why is that so strange to me? And I was like, oh, because we don't have it in Australia.
Yeah.
And did some research, and those sorts of ads would be completely illegal. You can't market medications direct to consumers.
Yeah.
Which is, it's pretty common sense, I think. You know? I don't think there's a great benefit in having a, having Big Pharma tell the general citizens what their sickness might be and how they can cure it, right?
Yeah, and then they also give doctors incentives to push their drugs, you know?
Also,
there's a lot of fuckery afoot.
As with NRA, you know, lobbying towards different political parties, Big Pharmacy is probably one of the biggest contributors, I'd assume.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. Crazy.
Yeah. Have you heard about Hawaii during their raising the age limit on tobacco? They're gonna, I think they're doing it like a couple years every year, so that like,
to what age?
Like, they just moved it from 18 to 21, I think. And then next year it'll be 23, and then so on and so on.
Yeah.
Until you just can't buy tobacco in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Which I thought that was an interesting policy.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly against it, but I don't know.
That's another difference in between America and Australia. I don't know. Have you ever heard about our tobacco policies? So they're super restrictive, and everyone from around the world always says, oh yeah, Australia's really expensive to buy cigarettes, isn't it? And it is. For, I don't smoke, but for like a packet it might be as high as $18 for like 20 smokes or whatever.
Right.
And people around the world notoriously say, oh, it's insanely expensive to buy cigarettes in Australia, and it's all artificial taxes on top, right? It's still the supply and demand would still be the same as in Australia as any other country, and you could if you wanted to supply cigarettes for a couple dollars a packet, but all of the what makes them so expensive is the taxes, and we tax the shit out of it because it's it doesn't seem to provide a whole lot of benefit to people, and it just clogs up the healthcare systems, and it's always the government who ends up paying for lung cancer and people in healthcare systems. So Australia's like had a full-on attack on tobacco for a long time, and one area in which they've been one of the more progressive countries in the world is they've taxed it hard, They've introduced plain packaging, which basically means that all cigarette packets are, they're not allowed any like superfluous advertising on them, and any fancy names like, you know, Frost White Alpines or something fancy.
Are they colorless? Sammy.
They're all an olive green.
Okay.
Kind of.
I like olive green. So that would be, they made it the one color that I think is sexy.
I assume some smart people have sat in a room and tested different colors on people, right, and they've come up with olive green. So I don't know what that says about you.
Should have went with pink.
Yeah,
pink. I wouldn't smoke girls, pink cigarettes.
No. Well, the cigarette itself is not colored, but the packet is olive green.
Yeah.
And it's super plain, and there's no like gold or any like advertising terms on there. It's just like Marlboro, whatever. It says the milligrams of tobacco in there. And so there's that, the taxes, the plain packaging, and you're not allowed to have them on show at like the supermarkets or delis or whatever. They're all behind black casings.
Okay.
Or under the shelf. So if you want cigarettes, you'll know that the shop has them, and you'll have to go and ask for whatever you want, but they're not like, they're not there in front of you, right?
Makes sense.
That's meant to help.
Is it an 18 year old age limit?
Yeah, 18 year old, 18 plus. And I haven't read the research papers myself, but everyone is saying that it's been super effective in curbing young people from starting to smoke. Just because, you know, it's kind of viewed as unsexy now.
Yeah. And that's when it happens, right? It's like the whole thing. Like, I heard something that like if you haven't smoked before you're 25 or something, like the chance of you starting is super, super slim.
Yeah.
Which definitely applied to me. I started at like 15 or something. Mm.
But you got out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, thankfully.
Was
it's hard,
there like
though.
one point where you were like, oh man, I gotta stop?
No, smoking. I had to try a few times. I guess the main thing was that I like working out and stuff like that, and there's a huge, you know, you can really tell your cardio is not happening very well if you're smoking a pack a day.
Yeah.
But
I can imagine.
Yeah.
It's funny how people will rationalize their own habits, in that smokers will often not agree to what you just said, in that it affects their cardiovascular performance.
Mm.
They'll often be like, "Oh no, like, you know."
I mean, in the army,
I've been getting fitter, and you know what I mean. But you know, logic tells us that it couldn't be the case that you're as good on cigarettes as not.
Yeah, we used to always joke around before we'd do like a 6 mile run in the army or something at like, you know, 5 a.m.
Yeah.
We'd be out there smoking cigarettes before we started, like, oh, I gotta get the lungs warmed up, you know, which was, it was a joke. We didn't actually believe it, but
there's
a lot of cigarette smokers in the military, so
yeah,
it was funny. And that was one of the only things we had to entertain ourselves with in Iraq, because you can't get alcohol when you're deployed.
Yeah.
So...
Were there any other drugs there?
No, actually, that was when synthetic marijuana first started showing up in America. And then, so we were, the first time I heard about spice was over in Iraq. They pulled everybody into a formation and they said, listen, we're getting reports that some of you fucking idiots are smoking incense that some of these Haji shops sell.
Yeah.
And
then what they say, it's shit for you, and just if you caught, you'll be reprimanded.
Yeah, pretty much that was the gist of it. But I was very confused at the time because I hadn't heard about any of these things yet. And I was like, people are smoking incense? And we did have a couple people had marijuana sent over, like in peanut butter jars. And so I can remember a couple times over there smoking a little weed up in the guard tower, because we'd be up in the guard tower for like 8 or 12 hours. And we weren't even really doing anything, because we were on an Iraqi army base at that time.
Yeah.
So it was like our base had our guard towers, but we were looking out at a protected area.
Yeah.
That was already, there wasn't, it was weird. Yeah. But, yeah, it was hard to enjoy it over there because you smoke a little bit and then go back to your tent where your superior, you know, lives. And I was always just paranoid, so.
Can't enjoy being high.
Yeah. Yeah, it was hard. But we did the tobacco to the fucking gills. We were like, I'd go up in the guard tower with
smoke a pack. Helicopter.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd go up with a pack of cigarettes, a couple cigars, and some dip, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Just switch off.
Yeah.
Awful.
I would have thought they might be like opium or something, given that.
We heard about it. I think in Afghanistan, maybe. That's more prevalent. I think the biggest, poppy fields. The
biggest producers.
Yeah. Mm. I know there's definitely been some of that.
Yeah.
Military partaking. Yeah. The Brits got to have beer. That was one thing. We'd watch them drink on the big base in Basra.
Nice.
Yeah.
They probably weren't allowed to get drunk, right?
Probably. I mean, yeah.
I assume they'd only get one or two beers per night.
Yeah.
Max.
Yeah, probably. And we did get so we got two beers on the Army's birthday, which I couldn't tell you when that is.
Mm-hmm.
And we also got two beers on Super Bowl Sunday.
Nice. Yeah.
But I was out doing back-to-back missions that Super Bowl night, and just like truck patrols where we'd go out and drive around with, you know, like 10 vehicles or something. We'd go out for like 4 or 6 hours, drive around.
Yeah.
And I did two of those that day. So by the time we finally got back to the base, everybody had went way over their two beer limit, and there was none left. So I didn't get any that day. But yeah, it was a bummer. Yeah. You could buy non-alcoholic beer over there, which I did a couple times just because, I don't know, I'm not super into soda. And they actually had my brand, St. Pauli Girl. Beer was one that I was real into when I lived in Washington. So that was just... Nice. Kind of miraculous that they had St. Pauli Girl, non-alcoholic, in Iraq.
St. Pauli Girl.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh.
Have you spoken on your podcast much about your time in the Army?
A little bit. So when I first started, I read some journal entries from Iraq. And my mom talked me into writing a journal when I was over there.
Yeah.
So I think the first episode I put out on this podcast was like, an hour of me reading those.
Yeah.
And I think I might do some more of that. But, and then I talk about basic training in another episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also planning on, I was just texting my buddy in Phoenix, Mike, who we were in the same time, deployed the same time, and got out. At the same time, I'm gonna do a discussion interview episode with him when I pass back through Phoenix. So I think that's something that people would like to hear.
You know,
I think there's a lot of misinformation about the military out there, and people have, you know, certain opinions or whatever. I don't know. I just don't think there's a whole lot of information from young veterans like us. Gets out.
Yeah. Do people treat you differently, like in the general public?
Definitely.
How would they find out that you're a veteran, though? Just through asking, or there's like, do you have like card, like a discount card or something?
I do still carry around my old military ID, and then my driver's license has a thing on it that says veteran, which gets me discounts certain places and stuff, which is cool.
Yeah.
A lot of people can tell just by the way you walk and stuff. I kind of like people watching and picking out the ones that, you know, walking very upright, you know, guy in his 50s or 60s or whatever, but he's got nice clean cut hair, and he's just, you know, I don't know, got maybe some Oakleys on, and he's just got a certain, we can recognize each other to an extent.
Do you think people they treat you kinder when they find out that you're a veteran?
For the most part, but then there's this whole thing about post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, is just that's an issue that bugs me, because I've been turned down from like dating a girl before because her friends told her that like dating veterans was not a smart idea. Like we're all, you know, fucked in the head and you know, might just snap at any second and hurt you or like whatever. And so that stuff, that's one of those things. Like I was talking about how the VA is dealing with like a crazy amount of false disability claims. Was that me and you talking about that?
Yeah,
and a lot of that has to do with PTSD and people claiming it that don't really have any problems and they're just trying to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of made it a lot more of an issue than it needed to be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, of course, those experiences change you. Like, there's everything changes you. All we are is, you know, a product of things that we've experienced and... Mm-hmm. And the way we've been brought up and culture and everything. So, of course, it changes you. But I don't know. I don't like that stigma at all. And it doesn't help the people that really have problems, you know, because they're afraid to talk about it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. But maybe that's dwindling. Maybe it was more of an issue a few years ago than it is now. I don't know.
But you're in no rush to join the army again?
No. No. I would only go back if there was a serious need. And it would have to be more clear-cut than the reasons we went into Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't... I still can't explain that whole mess, why we got into it. And yeah, that would be the only way I'd go back.
Yeah. Well, if Trump stays in power long enough, you don't know what'll happen, really.
Yeah.
Are you pro-Trump? Do you vote?
No.
You vote?
I voted for Hillary, but I'm also not happy about that decision. I feel like I kind of got duped into it, and you know,
Voting for Hillary.
Yeah, like I don't think she would have been a great option. She would have been a better option, possibly, but I don't know. It's either the far left or the far right, and nobody's having, like, logical discussions about a lot of things that need discussed.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all a dog and pony show to an extent, right? It's just people trying to get reelected, and there's all the money influence that we were talking about, and I just don't like it. I think we need to start over and just come up with a whole new system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big task, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be.
Yeah. But yeah, my family's pretty liberal.
Mm-hmm. They're in West Virginia, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mom and dad still back there.
Is that that's a blue state, typically? Where is it? Below, it's on the East Coast, right?
Yeah, like below New York and that way.
I kind of want to go out to some, like, really red states just to see what it's like, you know?
Yeah.
See people sitting around with guns on their porch.
Arizona's right next door. I mean, I don't know if they call themselves super red, but they're definitely pro-guns. That's one of the states, might be one of the only states in the U.S. You don't need a permit for concealed carry. So I actually lived there. That's where I went to diesel mechanic school after I got out of the military.
Yeah.
And right after, you know, right towards the end of my military time, and then afterwards, I was very much into, like, self-defense. Mm. I read a bunch of books, and, you know, I had this idea that I might try and make a career out of it as, like, an instructor or something. Mm-hmm. A lot because of the reasons we were talking about earlier. People don't know what they're doing with guns for the most part. And, in Arizona, it was pretty cool, because I concealed carried every day. Didn't have to worry about getting pulled over.
What did you have?
Just a little semi-automatic 380 Smith & Wesson Bodyguard. It was about the size of a cell phone. You could just keep it in your front pocket with a little, called a pocket holster, that keeps it oriented up and down. So But then there's the argument of, like, because open carry is completely legal out there, too. So just carrying on your hip for everybody to see is perfectly okay. And then, but there was also the argument of, like, gun grabs being kind of a big issue out there where a criminal...
They would snatch it from...
Yeah, people would, like, see you go into Walmart, and then they'd, like, call their buddy, and, you know, they'd be waiting for you around the corner when you came out, and they'd hit you on the head with something and steal your gun.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that. Home invasions were another kind of big issue out there. They got talked about a lot. I didn't, like, have any experience with people that went through it. But, yeah, apparently Arizona is one of the places where criminals are bold enough to just, like, kick down your door while you're watching TV in the living room and tie you up and rob you.
Yeah.
So that's pretty crazy. So I would always keep my Smith & Wesson on the coffee table when I was watching TV.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. I've never been the subject of any violent crime. Maybe that's...
Yeah, I can't say I have either, really.
I've had stuff stolen from me, but never... I've never noticed it go. You know, it's been pickpocketed, or I've left it in my car and it's gone, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Never been mugged in the street, or...
Right.
Fortunately.
Yeah. Maybe that goes to the, you know, the whole media influence on stuff, how people think that the media is gospel, and just because CNN says that, you know, there's a shit ton of home invasions in Arizona, like, maybe,
yeah,
you know, I never met anybody that experienced it, so.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys do have a 24-hour news cycle here, it seems, which... is very much fear-based. It seems that fear sells spots on the primetime media, right?
Yep.
There's some story about how the people in the world are out to get you, and you better watch out, and you better be afraid of this. Seems to be a big thing here. But that obviously contributes to the culture of the country heavily.
Definitely. Paranoid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's where podcasts can make a little bit of a shift, you know, with the popularity of them shooting through the roof in the past few years, it seems like. That's what... one of the things that brings people to them a lot more is that they're a lot more honest, and they take conversations and...
Yeah.
And actually go through them in detail instead of a 5-minute or 30-second clip of, like, the worst possible thing happening in your neighborhood today. It's like, you know, you don't see it really with your own eyes on a day-to-day basis, so maybe it's not as bad as we think.
Yeah.
And I get, most of my current event knowledge comes from podcasts mostly nowadays. I mean... I got the CNN app on my phone, and Vice News, just because I think they're a more honest and, you know, kind of counter to the whole mainstream media thing.
Yeah.
And they talk about cool stuff, like, you know, ayahuasca and...
Yeah, yeah.
Mushrooms and stuff that I like talking about, but,
yeah. Have you experimented much with psychedelics?
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, I did, like, the usual teenage stuff growing up, like, mushrooms, but I think, we think about them in the wrong context, you know, when you're a kid, it's, you know, something you're gonna have, everybody wants to trip, everybody wants to see dragons, and, you know, crazy stuff, and, a lot of cultures view it more as a perspective enhancer or a rite of passage. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I am actually microdosing mushrooms right now. I take like about 0.2 grams every 3 days or so.
Okay.
And that was actually the way I got off antidepressants. I was on Paxil for about a year and a half or something like that. And I tried to quit a couple times and had the drop-off moment, like, you know, a month after you quit taking it or something, you just get, like, this intense sadness, you know? It just comes back and you're overwhelmed and anxious. And I think that psilocybin mushrooms are a good alternative to that. I know quite a few people that microdose or
Do you feel it after you take them mm-hmm. in the third day period?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, even just the real small amount. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just makes me wanna breathe really deep and stretch and
yeah,
just relax a little bit. Nice. But yeah, mushrooms are crazy, right? It's like not really a plant, not really an animal.
Mm.
They're just this
fungus, right?
Yeah. I think there's even just like the health benefits of eating, you know, regular mushrooms for cooking, whatever.
Yeah.
I think that there's something to them.
Yeah. I just gotta take a piss really quick.
Sure.
Let me come back.
Let's go for a bush leak.
Hard to get a good night's sleep here. I was alright on Hollywood Boulevard though.
Yeah, but noisy. You don't sleep with earplugs, right?
No.
I always sleep with earplugs.
Yeah, it was noisy. I
probably had to move at 7.
Yeah. Oh, paranoid I was gonna get hit by a fucking car in the middle. I kept hearing the buses and like trucks and stuff, but I think people are probably used to that.
Parking. I drove all the way down to Sanborn Street to Venice.
Oh, yeah. So, what was that like? 40 minutes or something to get there?
Nah, not at that time of night. No. 25.
Nice.
That was kind of why I wasn't going to drive the whole way, but then because I thought I'd be too tired, but I was like, oh, I might as well smash it out now while there's no one on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. So how big were the waves this morning, do you think?
Maybe like the biggest one's probably 4 feet, but then some on average maybe like 2 to 3. Super fun.
Yeah.
Andrew came out, met some people out there. It's good. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, we got 20 minutes to get barbecued before you gotta switch your laundry over, huh?
And go in and try to figure out the dryer.
I got you. I got your back.
What was your take on that interaction just then with that guy?
Man, another
too confusing.
Another LA mystery. I mean, at first he said he couldn't see, and then he said he sees better than he hears. And so,
yeah.
I mean, I only picked up half of it, probably, but,
they just world, didn't want to give me the washing detergent?
Yeah, I'm sure that's it, too.
What's that? What is going on? It smells good.
Yeah. Remind me, I'll leave you with some of this bud, too.
Yeah, if you're going to get rid of it.
Yeah, yesterday was good. Do you remember who was the first comedian to go on at the store?
Wasn't it the girl with the beanie?
Oh, the pink, the jeans the and the pink one, hat. Yeah. Yeah, she was good.
Sexy.
Yeah. She was.
Yeah, I think it was her, and then
I thought it was the guy that I was trying to tell you about. The dad, he's kind of nondescript, man. He's like white, short hair, facial, bit of stubble. He made some jokes about being a dad and being married.
Yeah, it's hard for me to keep track.
Yeah, we probably saw, what, like 10 or 12 of them? 10 or 12 comedians?
Yeah, at least.
That was the best comedy gig I've ever been to, for sure.
Right. Like, you're lucky if you go to an open mic night and somebody makes you bust out laughing once in, like, a couple hours. Yeah. And those guys, that first chick from her on, just...
I was just constantly...
Jesus.
It did get worse towards the end, but... Towards the end, some of the guys, I felt like... Some of the guys and girls, mainly the guys, were trying to just to do stage work. You know, like they probably had bits, but they're like, oh, I'm gonna go up later and just practice.
Oh, crowd work, you mean?
Yeah, crowd. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, crowd work.
Yeah, no, I gotcha. Yeah, definitely.
Like that guy that was just hacking on the Canadian.
Yeah, I mean that was too easy. That was.
Josh was out with Paris.
That's what I was just thinking about.
Disneyland.
Yeah, not the greatest weather for it, but not the worst either, I guess.
Fucking Disneyland, hey.
I'm not sure if I've been to.
Thanks for listening to the podcast, guys. I got another one lined up, ready to publish soon. That is myself, Zach, and Josh from London. We recorded on the same day as the second half of the episode you just listened to. So tune in for that. Till then, be good, guys. Later.